It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. That's all the same. I haven't been in the studio for 4 weeks. It feels a little bit odd, I have to say, which is probably the sign of a good holiday. When you come back to your workplace or your office and you feel like you're doing it for the first time. It's a bit like first day back at school. There's sort of trepidation, a little bit scary, a little bit excited, a little bit imposter syndrome. All of that rolled into one. But it's great to be back. And thanks so much to Catherine Thomas, who kept the seat warm for the last 3 weeks. This is the time where you say, well, what was your holiday like? And I bore you with the details. Remember when you were at school and you went back and you had to write an essay about your summer holidays? What I did during the summer holidays. I went to this and I visited my auntie and then we had an ice cream cone and it was fine and the sun was lovely and all that sort of thing. But hello to everybody I met on my travels over the last 3 weeks. Too many to mention, but everybody was very nice and very kind. And we did loads of different stuff. The one thing I will mention is, because I didn't know this existed, it's a thing called the Couch to Cave. Now, you've heard about the Couch to 5K. Well, there's a lady down Waterford Way called Rachel, and she set up this thing called Couch to Cave, and she brings people out with her, people who like to swim in the sea. You know those people, yeah? But she explores the Copper Coast, which is a much underrated, can you say that? Is that oxymoron? Much underrated coastline down in Waterford. And she brings them out of an evening and they swim into caves and into coves that you couldn't get to by land. And everyone has a good time. And it's called Couch to Cave and it's brilliant. And loads of people seem to be enjoying it. And it all happened organically because she was giving lessons to children. And then the mother said, we'd love to be able to swim. We can't swim. Brought them into the pool. When they got good in the pool, they said, well, maybe I'd like to do a bit of sea swimming because the children are doing it. So we don't want to be shown up by the children. And then brought them out to the sea. Rachel did, taught them how to swim in the sea. And then when they got more adventurous, what are we going to do now? You can swim in the sea. And then she started the Couch to Cave thing, which is brilliant. So Couch to Cave, if you're down that way at any stage and you want to do a little bit of swimming in the sea. I spotted this over the weekend and I don't know how Mary Fitzgerald feels about it. Yeah. How do you do indeed? Cushel, who make Lurol, have developed the first insert-free toilet roll. So, you know, the toilet roll insert was what Mary Fitzgerald depended on all those years ago to make rockets and chairs and dolls and all sorts of things. You couldn't do anything in make and do without toilet roll inserts. And now it looks like it's going to be a thing of the past. I see Peter Purvis, who used to be on Blue Peter. He's shocked and horrified. He says, in all my years on Blue Peter, loo roll was always the most essential element on doing all the make and do programmes. It appeared about 5 out of every 10 things we had on the show. I think if you were to ask Mary Fitzgerald, it would be 10 out of 10. Anyway, there you go. That's the way the world's changing. So all of those fans of space travel who would have been waiting to see Artemis take off today and maybe replicate the rocket with toilet roll inserts, gather them up now because they're going to be a thing of the past. They're going to be a thing of the past, toilet roll inserts. Yeah, so we were getting very excited. It was the main story on the news this morning on Morning Ireland that Artemis, the rocket, is supposed to take off and do an unmanned flight and then they're going to put people on the moon you know, within the next 3 or 4 years. And we got Kevin Nolan says, Kevin, come in and tell us all about that. And of course, it's been cancelled. Or in the technical terms they use in NASA, it's been scrubbed. Not that, this.
This is Artemis Launch Control with an update. Launch Director Charlie Blackwell Thompson has called a scrub for today. Again, Launch Director Charlie Blackwell Thompson has called a scrub.
Scrub, that's what they call it. You see the way I got the buttons mixed up there? That might happen a couple of times throughout the show today, so just be prepared. But Kevin is coming in anyway, because we want to put it in context, because it's 50 years, as you'll know by now, since the last man walked on the moon, and it was feverish, the activity between 1969 and 1972, and then nothing for 50 years. Why so? And why now? And what are the plans? And of course, back then it was you know, there was huge politics involved, the space race and who would get the first man on the moon. Would it be Russia? Would it be America? And of course, America won that race. Now it's there's a lot more cooperation between governments and between public and private sector. And Kevin has all the details on that. And indeed, he has been at a launch that failed. So he'll be able to empathise with the people in NASA today who had to scrub that takeoff, that planned takeoff. But it will happen on Friday or Monday, the 2nd or the 5th of September. So that's that. There's loads of things on TikTok, you know, and you're hearing about them every day. And every day in the meeting, people go, saw this on TikTok, saw that on TikTok. And very rarely do things make the cut. But Tariq, who we reckon is about 6, has made the cut. He did an interview with a guy called Julian Shapiro Barnum about corn, as in corn on the cob. Now, Tariq had just discovered that corn on the cob was real, as in real as opposed to, I don't know what, but as a child, I suppose you could have thought it was a sweet, it was manufactured, it was synthetic. But Tariq has just discovered that corn is real when Julian Shapiro decides to interview him about corn. And it's just the lovely enthusiasm for corn. Have a listen.
For me, I really like corn. Ever since I was told that corn is real, it tasted good. But when I tried it with butter, everything changed. I love corn. Corn. I mean, then look at this then. I can't imagine a more beautiful thing. It's corn! Look at this.
It's corn!
Because corn is awesome!
Can you describe corn to someone who's never tasted it before?
A big lump with knobs. It has the juice.
It has the juice, which he likes. That's Tariq, who's a TikTok sensation. Hundreds of millions of people have watched him and they've put his words to music as they do on TikTok. I wonder how it'll pan out for him, this moment in the sun. Will it affect his life in any way, shape or form? While we're on children, Seamus O'Reilly, him of Did You Hear Mammy Died? That brilliant book. We've had him on the show a couple of times. Very funny man. He writes regularly for The Guardian. And today he writes about his son's mispronunciation of words. So instead of sandwich, he says samgich. Instead of spaghetti, he says paschetti. See, these, and then that got us talking, of course, and about us and our children and nieces and nephews and all sorts of things. And hostible is a favourite one. Now, if there's a linguist out there, a language therapy person, they might explain why so many children get hospital wrong and say hostable. And then somebody up there remembers that they used to say a countulator as opposed to a calculator. That sort of makes sense. Straw babies instead of strawberries. In our house, I remember somebody used to say puggle instead of puddle and footered instead of forehead. So if you have anything to share with us about mispronunciations from children. And you see, as a parent or as an adult, be it, you know, a bigger sister, brother or, an auntie or an uncle, you're conflicted, aren't you? Because it's so cute that you don't want to correct them because you want to hear them saying chimney instead of chimney. And you want them to hear them saying puggle instead of puddle. So you're reluctant to correct them. Because then there's a bit of the innocence gone and it's part of growing up. And at home in our house, Jenny constantly says to our children, I wish I could give you a tablet that would stop you right there. Just stop you right there at that level of cuteness. I don't want you to grow anymore. Just that level of mispronunciation and cuteness and compliance and all the good stuff. But of course, that's impossible. And even if it was possible, it'd be ethically wrong, as you know. 51551 ray at rte.ie. There's damsons on the damson tree outside. I thought they were plums, but somebody told me last year they're damsons. And luckily enough, I spotted in one of the papers over the weekend a recipe for damson and almond crumble cakes, which I will make this evening and share with you tomorrow. But that's impossible because we're on the radio. I was told by a teacher that kids can't use toilet roll holders in school for an art and crafts anymore due to hygiene reasons. Ah, come on. Health and safety gone mad. My son, who is now an adult, wanted to be a loo roll checker when he grew up. He thought you just had to jump on giant ones and hug them. Says Catherine. We developed, I'll share this with you if you're organising a children's party in the next while. It's a loo roll balancing game. So you just get a 9-pack or an 18-pack of loo rolls. You'll always use them. And you have to balance them one on top of the other and walk with them. And whoever can walk the furthest distance wins. And so you start at 6, eh? And then you walk in 6, and then you add another one, 7, 8. It's a brilliant game, and it's cheap, and it's good fun. It's good fun. Nobody's going to be hurt doing that. My sister Rosalind used to say, Copty Heller, instead of helicopter. I'd say that's an often mispronounced word by children. Copty Heller instead of helicopter. My daughter Zoe called fish fingers wick wingers. You have to be careful. That's Cathy, wick wingers. Keep them coming in, 5 on 551 RadioRTE.ie. Kevin McAleer is on the show today. I am a huge fan of Kevin McAleer, right back to the Nighthawk days. Just a genius. And then, of course, he reappeared and came back into our lives in Derry Girls and was brilliant in it. And we've been trying to get him for a long time. But today he made the trip down from Omagh and he's outside. I've been speaking to him. He's in good form and he's going to come in and talk to us soon. So that's two Kevins on the show today. You have to be a Kevin. And you've heard about, and congratulations to Rory McIlroy, 18 million. 18 million. What a win over in Atlanta. And unfortunately, we couldn't get him today. He wasn't unavailable to us. But we have another winner, an international winner called Keola. And Keola is an axe thrower. And she has represented Ireland in Nova Scotia over the weekend. And she won. She is a world champion axe thrower. And we have her on the show very shortly. My brother always said buckle instead of bottle. I think that's common enough. My daughter used to say I'm a moose instead of orange juice before preschool. Our gorgeous daughter Grace used to call double-decker buses deckle-dubbers. I love that one. Deckle-dubbers. We still call them that now. Are you getting a deckle-dubber? Or a single-decker? What would a single-decker be in her world? 5 on 551 ray at rte.ie. I'll tell you about her quiz in a moment, but first, a bit of this. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, you're crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Guess who saw the Elvis movie on holidays? It's brilliant. I loved it. The Buzz Luhrmann movie. And I didn't see it in the cinema. It's available now on streaming services. And I think it's brilliant. A lot of people, purists, didn't like it. Said it was a bit cartoony. But it's great. And just the music. The music is spectacular. That I reckon that's about 70 years old. That song's about 70 years old. It's hard to believe, isn't it? Hound Dog by the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley. Now, my daughter called ice cream lick cream, and a butterfly was a flutterfly. Our son called a helicopter a helitractor, and a microwave a microwave. My husband, when a child, used to say swaps instead of wasps, says Catherine. And my daughter referred to the wishdosher. That's great. I love that one. The wishdosher as opposed to dishwasher. And my daughter Billy called butterflies flutterbys and umbrellas rainbrellas. See, there's method there. There's method. A how and a half was a cow and a calf. My youngest, that's from Eugene. My youngest could never say her R's. When asked her name, she'd reply, woot. I loved it. Sadly, she grew out of it, but it's a very fond memory. My son called the Martello, is it Martello? Martello? Tower, the Marshmallow Tower. I've always thought it was a better name. The right shape, and probably described how strong our defence would have been if Napoleon ever arrives, as Ruth. And our daughter always reminded her dad not to miss his unction off the M50. Don't miss your unction. My nephew said, I need a Pamela Ewing one day. He meant Piano Louis. Irish pencil. That's a big difference, a Pamela Ewing and a Piano Louis. They're great. Now, the quiz. It's still here. Here you go. Yep, we have bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies, and we want two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each. And there is a prize. You could win a two-night stay for two in a four-star hotel in any Ainua Collection Hotel. Ainua have a stunning array of hotels dotted across Ireland. Kick back in Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel. Enjoy some downtime in Dundalk's Fairways Hotel. Taste the magic in the Tullamore Court Hotel and Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, or any of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Lots to choose from there. Ainua.ie. There is something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea. or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the iNUA collection. So here is your qualifying question today, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Which former member of One Direction has announced a gig in Slane? That was last week, wasn't it? Which former member of One Direction has announced a gig in Slane? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 5155 on Ray at RTE.ie. As I was saying, an Irish woman has claimed the title of best female axe thrower in the world. Yes. Ciola McGowan from Sligo became the woman's... You're laughing there, Ciola. Let me do the introduction before you start laughing. It's serious stuff. Ciola McGowan from Sligo became the women's world axe throwing champion in Nova Scotia in Canada overnight. And she's on the line. Congratulations, Ciola.
Thank you. Sorry, I laugh because it's still kind of not real.
Yeah. Like, and you were up against the best in the world, weren't you?
Yeah, actually, the way the finals worked out was that there was you got down to six competitors, three throws, lowest score knocked out. You continue down the line until you're just left with two. And the person that I was actually throwing against was the female world champion at the time, Ankie Hepburn. So it was quite intense.
Yes, and she would have been favoured, I would imagine, would she?
Oh, yes, yes, very highly so.
Yeah. So this is brilliant. Will there be an open-top bus in Wicklow when you return home?
No, not at all. I'm in Canada for another week and then be landing at 7 o'clock Monday morning, so I'll be going straight to the bed.
Yeah, because it's a small but growing sport, axe throwing.
It is.
How did you get into it?
I got into it in 2018 just by pure happenstance. I think that's how most people kind of get into it. It was just kind of random. I was doing a master's in TV broadcast production down in Dunleary, and it was a case of we had a couple of extra students on board to help the project. And one of the girls I got chatting to was like, yeah, I'm off to the woods tonight, throw axes with a bunch of hairy, smelly, sweaty men. And I was like, you're off to do what, where, who? And can anybody do this? And that was kind of it. Then I jumped in my car, drove up to the Wicklow Mountains and never looked back.
And you obviously found that you had a skill, a talent when it came to throwing axes.
We got down to the barn and the axes, they look really intimidating. They feel quite heavy and you kind of pick it up and you're like, oh my God, am I really going to put this thing over my head and throw it down 20 feet into a wall-mounted target? It's kind of like, am I really just about to do this? So there's like the buzz of that, the high of when you actually do it. And then when you kind of get into the groove, it actually really becomes so meditative. The sound of the axe hitting the target, that kind of thunk, it's almost kind of like a heartbeat. It's really, there's no other kind of feeling in the world like it.
Right. You heard that there. Here's another one. That sounds like a cartoonish one, doesn't it? Here we go. It doesn't make that sound as it moves through the air, does it?
Well, apparently one of the girls, I would have it's very slow to start throw, but once I'm kind of locked in, I throw quite fast. Yeah. And then I have heard the girls beside me say, it's kind of like, I can hear that whoosh as it's leaving your hand. Sometimes, yeah. Depending if it catches the wind correct the right way.
And where is the strength coming from? Like, is it the shoulder, the upper arm, the wrist, or what's the motion?
Funny enough, you don't actually need to be that strong to throw an axe. It's kind of down to technique, because not only is it growing in the sport for women, it's also growing in the sport for juniors, because there's a junior category there as well. We actually had an Irish junior, Finn Standing, and he placed fifth for the juniors. So I can't remember what age Finn is, but you have to be under 16.
Right.
So it's not all about strength, but I find that I do pole fitness in Bray with Flow Fitness, and I find that helps with my core. Yeah. My balance, and it is kind of, it does come from the shoulders a little bit. I'd say shoulders and core.
And is there a trophy or a medal, or what do you get? Or do you get a golden axe, or what do you get?
I got a cash prize. I got a beautiful trophy, and I got a gorgeous little challenge coin as well, which is adorable. And it was so great to kind of get the history behind the challenge coin. So yeah, those are the things I got.
And you bring your own axe.
I bring my own axe.
That must cause logistical problems, does it?
There are some airlines that do specify kind of, you know, knives, weapons, that kind of thing. Yeah. Depends on the airline most of the time. But, you know, I check it underneath sporting equipment or tools because that's what it is. And it just goes straight under the plane. Uh-huh. And generally speaking, I've never had any hassle with it, really. So
after Neil spoke to you today, he says, Ciola is a lovely, mild-mannered woman. And I said, well, if you know, if somebody's going to be throwing an axe, mild-mannered is probably a good description of them. So is this your alter ego? Are you venting when you throw an axe, or is it something different?
No, not venting at all. Well, it's like nothing beats throwing an axe after having a rotten day.
Yeah,
but no, it's not a vent thing at all. It's yoga.
Right.
It's meditation. It's relaxation. It really does. Like so many axe throwers will tell you, when they're in the zone, it's just zen. That's all it is.
It's zen. Brilliant.
Zen.
So what happens now? You'll be back next year to defend your title, will you? And are there events around the country?
So the World Championships only takes place every 2 years.
Okay.
So I get to hold on to it for 2 years at the very least. So there are axe throwing competitions that take part on kind of Italy, Germany, UK, Scotland, Ireland as well. We did have an Irish Open last year, but we didn't do one this year because we were busy prepping for the World Championships. So next year, there is going to be a competition in Sweden. It's called the Week of Hell.
Right.
There's about 1,000 kilometers to cover, 6 competitions, 6 days. So basically, you'll be like waking up, throwing in a competition and then driving to the next one and then throwing in the competition and then sleeping and then waking up and then driving to the next one. So it's called Week of Hell and I'm really looking forward to it. So I don't have the full, I haven't released all the information for it yet, but that'll be the big one next year.
I don't want to introduce a downer here, but health and safety issues around axe throwing.
Axe throwing is actually, and I would argue this, and a lot of axe throwers would probably agree with me, safer than archery. Because in archery, you're pulling back a bow and you're creating force. Axe throwing, you are the force. And you're not accidentally going to release an axe into somebody's head. So there's always the health and safety procedures. Whenever we do guest nights down at the Wicklow Axe Throwers in Newtown Mount Kennedy, the last Thursday of the month, and safety is always paramount.
Okay, okay.
So we'll always kind of, you know, tell people we throw together, collect together. If you're not throwing, stay behind the line. The axes tend to be blunt because they don't need to actually be particularly sharp because they're not going into boarded targets. They're going into rounds, which is essentially a tree trunk.
Okay, so they're safe-ish. So, as safe as a blunt axe can be. Yes. Okay. Well, Ciola McGowan, congratulations again. Best female axe thrower in the world. Yay.
Thank you so much.
Bye. On RTE Radio 1. Kevin McAleer, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you.
Good to be here.
Yeah. We were trying to get you for a long time, so it's great to see you in the flesh. There was a couple of false dawns and false starts,
a bit like the rocket
taking off today. But you're here.
Yeah, I can't remember half of the things that got in the way, but here I am.
Here you are. Great to see you. You're looking healthy.
Thank you. So are you.
Yeah, thank you. Love your t-shirt. Suits your eyes. It's actually in tune with the RT Radio 1 colours.
Yeah.
It's nearly like a camouflage.
I had to check, did it say anything, you know, because I do have t-shirts that say things.
All right.
Well, that's one of the quieter ones.
Yeah. I was telling people that you were coming on and they'll know you from Derry Girls and from Nighthawks. And there's a good chunk of time in between those two things, isn't there?
Yeah.
So let's start with Derry Girls first. Then we'll start with Derry Girls and work backwards, or we'll see how it goes.
See how far I get.
See how it goes.
I can't remember.
See how it goes. Yeah. So that scene with yourself and Tommy Tiernan and the breadsticks. If people haven't seen it, it is one of my favourite bits of comedy ever. So the Derry Girls thing, it must have been like sort of something from heaven that landed on your lap. It was perfect for you, written for you.
Well, I'm sure if I hadn't agreed to do it, they would have got somebody else to do it, you know. But, you know, like the script was obviously, you know, Uncle Colin was obviously related in some way to my old Nighthawks character, you know. And they did send me the script, the casting company to see would I be interested. And of course, when I read it, I was very interested. And I rattled off a video demo, you know. There's a name for them now,
isn't there? They don't call them demos anymore.
Yeah, there's a technical term.
There is, yeah.
But I'm obviously not an actor, or I would know what it is. But anyway, they liked it.
You're non-acting, demo tape.
Yeah. And I got the part, as they say.
But you're not an actor. You're
no.
No. At all.
No, I mean, I can act a version of myself, you know, and I suppose all my comedy stuff, my live stuff is a slight variation of myself, I suppose, you know, not that far removed from the real me, whatever that is. But obviously that was a very easy part for me to play.
Did you have a conversation with Lisa McGee, who wrote Derry Girls, about why she wanted you?
No.
At all. No.
No, and still haven't.
Have you not? I thought that would have been an obvious conversation. No?
Well, I mean, she did say she was a fan, you know, and obviously that, you know, the character is obviously, you know, I'm well suited to play that character. Yes. I mean, people give me compliments that they say I'm a natural.
Natural bore.
People say I'm a natural in that role, and I do take that as a compliment. And but in a very understated way, but they never notice that I might not be bowled over by that, you know. They just think I'm being natural.
I just say a version of yourself.
I just say, oh, thanks very much, and they don't notice that I'm being slightly, you know, sardonic.
You have great crack in your own head, don't you? Is it a funny place to be?
I do like being in my own head. I've just been on the bus there for 3 hours, and I like daydreaming, you know. And to be just somewhere and you're travelling, you can have that daydream without any little voice in the back of your head telling you maybe you should be doing something else, you know. I mean, that voice is very quiet at the best of times, but it's just nice to be in a place where it's not. It's not there at all.
Yeah.
I do like a good daydream.
Hmm. So you did, we're jumping around here, you don't mind. You did philosophy in UCD. And was that where you discovered that you might be into stand-up? You're laughing at me now. Stand-up comedy. Where did that start?
I did philosophy, psychology and logic in UCD, but only because they were the subjects that you could just... get away with and not really being there, you know, because my motives for going to UCD were very dodgy. I just wanted the Northern Grant, you know. And I had a few friends in UCD who had this inside information about what the really flaky subjects were, you know, that you could sort of get by enough to get the grant the next year, but not have to really kill yourself in the process. And the results of their research were philosophy, psychology and logic. So I took them at their word, and they were very right as well. I did manage to just fake my way through it for a couple of years, and then spectacularly failed my finals, of course, because there was no financial carrot to focus my mind for the next year.
Uh-huh.
But
and that was, people may not know this, but I was in college back in the 80s as well, and the Northern Grant was famous. It was quite substantial, wasn't it?
It was, and I didn't...
And why was that, do you know?
I had a late vocation to the Northern Grant. I didn't go straight to college when I left school. I actually went and did journalism in Rathmines Tech. But the Northern Grant was someone I discovered just, you know, from people talking about it a few years later. And I got very interested in it, you know. It was quite a lump of money, so I became very deeply interested in philosophy, psychology, and logic. Yeah.
Although right up to now, Why Am I Here is the name of your current show, which stinks of philosophy and logic and psychology, and so it's taken you all this time to maybe you're just asking questions as opposed to answering them.
What's that?
In the show, are you asking questions as opposed to answering them? Why am I here?
Yeah, mostly asking them, you know, and there's a bit where I ask this guru, you know, what's the meaning of life? And he says, if you have to ask the question, it means you don't know the answer. You know, so it's that sort of
rubbish,
fake rubbish. Yeah. But I suppose I am interested in, I am interested in psychology, not so much philosophy. I remember when I was doing the philosophy in UCD, I always thought to myself, I couldn't understand why people would ask the questions they were asking, you know. And the history of philosophy is starts with a question that doesn't need to be asked. And then everybody, all the philosophers through the centuries responded to that and refined it and adapted it and came up with their own explanations. And I ended up thinking, if you didn't ask these questions that I couldn't see any point in asking them, there would be no point for all these schools of thought, you know, to get the answers to them. You know, I was very, very puzzled.
Philosophy wouldn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my reason for doing it was to get the grant.
Yeah.
You know, I knew exactly what the meaning of life was.
The Northern Grant.
But I couldn't understand the need to pose these questions, and I didn't understand the questions or the need to ask them.
Yeah. Like, not, you know, those ones you hear over and over again, like how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin or something, like a pinhead? Those ones, no, more serious ones than that.
Well, you know, there's some of the schools of thought and whole debates, you know, and counter debates that I came across in studying the history of philosophy were much more stupid questions than that.
Right.
That was one of the more intelligent ones. The sound of one hand clapping.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And if a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound if there's nobody there to hear it?
Yeah, I did get a 10-minute sketch out of that where I went and did an experiment. You know, I got up in the middle of the night and went into the forest with a chainsaw and cut down a few trees. And then I went into the village the next day and I said to people, did you hear anything during the night? And they said, no, I didn't hear anything. And that proved to me that there wasn't anybody in the forest when I was cutting down the trees, because if they had been there, they would have heard it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I suppose that's the thing about philosophy. It's people never subject it to scientific scrutiny, really.
Yeah, well, it's impossible, you know. It's playing with language a lot of the time, you know. And, of course, I like playing with language, you know, and I like a bad pun, you know, so examining those questions is good for, you know, you can get a good bit of nonsense out of them.
So there was journalism and then philosophy, psychology, logic and the Northern Grant. And then at what stage did Nighthawks happen then?
That would have been late 80s, you know. And I had been doing stand-up for a couple of years before that. I started in maybe the mid-80s. And it was Anne Enright was a producer on Nighthawks. Now a very successful and talented author, of course. But she saw me doing a show in the Project Arts Centre and asked me would I be interested in coming up with someone for Nighthawks, and I was very interested, you know, and came back with that character, you know, the outline of that long-winded character, the old storyteller character, and that was a great break for me.
Yeah, because you were a cult figure, weren't you? Like, and it was before, obviously, things went viral or anything like that. But it was water cooler moments. People were talking about it. Did you see Nighthawks last night? Did you see Kevin McAleer? All kinds of everything. One of your greatest hits.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, you're from the north. Dana's from the north, so there was a connection there.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you get that from? Where you sort of in a monotone recite the lyrics of famous songs?
Yeah, it came out by accident, improvising to... I used to improvise to a camera, a very old VHS camera, and that was the way I came up with ideas. And most of it, you know, you would end up erasing it the next day. But on this occasion, I just slipped into that voice and just talked off the top of my head for about 45 minutes. And when I played it back, I thought, this is a gold mine. You know, like I've sort of stumbled on something here, you know. And obviously, there was so many different themes you could apply that mentality to and that voice to, you know. So it kept me going for a good few years.
And DVD sales were through the roof. weren't they?
VHS sales.
No, sorry, not yeah. weren't DVDs. VHS, yeah. sorry.
VHS sales. Yeah. Yeah. EMI brought out a VHS.
Yeah. How many did it sell?
Can and a cassette. Not just a VHS.
So people were listening to you in the car. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many, can you, any memory?
No idea.
I go on, you do.
I really don't.
What?
I don't have any figures at all.
Do you not?
I must ring EMI and ask them.
Are you on Spotify? Am I on Spotify? That'd be weird. There's a guy called Kevin McAleer on the phone. He wants to know if he's on Spotify.
And it never made it to DVD, you know, like,
no.
It never got past the VHS stage.
Well, that's something you were sad about.
I've made a DVD myself, right. Actually, from a VHS copy. Yeah. So there's one DVD. If anybody wants to make me an offer.
Yeah, we're talking to Kevin McAleer. I have to take a quick commercial break, and we resume our conversation after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Kevin McAleer, I'm surprised you haven't done a podcast. Do you know that back in the day when you turned on the VHS camera and you did your musings for 40 minutes? Like, all you have to do is turn on a microphone and do your musings and put it up there, and you would be on Spotify. Officially, at the moment, you're not on Spotify.
Not on Spotify.
No, not on Spotify.
I can confirm that officially.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of people say that to me about podcasts, and I've been on quite a few podcasts. And you know, when I'm on, you know, or not on air, but I'd say to the people, "What's the attraction?" They say they're very, very popular.
Yeah.
You know, and they're very easy to make, and they'd be perfect for you. But I'm not actually that chatty. You know, like my stuff is very. My stuff was very scripted, you know, like, and I spent a lot of time picking over the words of someone, you know, and it's not my strong point, just talking loosely, you know, like I think I would run out of ammunition very quickly. There, I've just done it now to illustrate the point.
So Nighthawks, and that was a moment, because Nighthawks was something that people had never seen before. It was live. It was in a cafe type thing. Shea Healy was brilliant at it. They broke big stories, you know, that weren't been broken on current affairs programmes. And there you were in the middle of all that. Was there a sense that it was something sort of a little bit dangerous, a little bit edgy?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. And like the more you look back on it, the more you can see that that was a great format for the program, you know, and I don't think at the time anybody realized how rich it was, you know, like there was germs of four or five programs in there, you know, and for me it was just like my big break, and didn't realize it at the time because all my stuff was done to camera, you know, and just slotted in, and I was also, by that point, I'd moved to London. So I was coming over, I'd come back over and record another, you know, half a dozen of them and then back to London. So I was a bit slow to hear of the reaction, you know. It was only when I was doing, I'd set up some live gigs and they were sold out much more quickly than usual. And suddenly realised this is making a big splash here, you know. And before I knew it, I was doing, you know, five nights in the Olympia and all on the strength of the reaction to that. And it was a lovely phenomenon as well, in that the TV stuff very often eats people's material, you know, but the TV stuff was the germ of my live stuff, you know. All these little 3-minute ideas, I was able to expand them live. So I got a whole live act from the germs of those ideas on TV, which is a nice reversal of the process, you know.
And then did you feel awkward when you were invited, say, on the Late Late Show, or, you know, were you out of your comfort zone in a big way then, or?
Well, the only thing I would have done there would have been my act.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah, so it was never a conversation.
No, I mean, I have sat down and had a conversation.
We're having one now, I think.
Yeah. But again, I don't think it's my strong point. No. As soon as I start saying that,
you dry up. Stop saying it.
It's not my what do you call it? Strong point. Right, yeah.
So, do you mind? You got the bus down, and it was free.
Yeah.
Which
yeah, I'm at that age.
You're at that age, yeah. Yeah, but you're looking great for a man at that age.
Yeah. Well, it's the free bus passes keeping me young.
Young looking, isn't it?
It's great to get someone back off the government, you know, like they owe it to me.
How long does it take to come from Omagh down to?
About 3 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. We gave you a bit of homework to do on the bus, which we'll get to in a moment. But you're happy to do that for us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So how many children have you got?
I've got 3.
And they're all gone?
Yeah. They're my daughter's 32 and I've got twin boys. You're 31, you know, so they're well up and gone, you know.
Mm.
I just updated my Wikipedia page the other day. They said they were all living at home, but that was based on an article that was written about, you know, 25 years ago. So they're all out in the world now.
What possessed you to update your Wikipedia page?
Just so that people wouldn't think that my kids were still living at home with me, you know. Right. It's for their sake, it's for the children's.
and them, they're old enough to appreciate Derry Girls. What was their reaction to it?
Yeah, they're fans as well, and I've got my son's in Vancouver, and I was overseeing him there about a month ago, and you know, Derry Girls has reached Vancouver, you know, it's a bit of a phenomenon. It seems to have reached everywhere, you know. And my other son is I've got one in Edinburgh, and my daughter's in Cork, and they're all quite tickled by it.
Are they? Yeah.
Yeah.
And have they inherited your funny gene?
Not to
be careful. They might hear this.
not to the point where they want to do something with it professionally, you know. But no, I've definitely noticed them coming out with you know, smart remarks, you know. And but they haven't showed any urge to apply that to making a living, you know.
So the Derry Girls effect now, probably similar to the Nighthawks effect. You find the tickets are selling a bit faster than they...
Oh, yeah. Big time, yeah. Like the Series 3 sort of coincided with me getting the spark back for getting up on a stage again, you know, because as you can imagine, during lockdown, the spark was well and truly gone. You didn't have any choice in the matter, but at some point in the middle of lockdown, I thought maybe that I was going to retire, you know. I wasn't sure if I would ever get up on a stage again, you know.
And were you happy with that?
Mixed feelings about it, you know. It was kind of exciting in a way, but I'd be going past theatres feeling slightly nostalgic, you know. But the nostalgia was a bit premature, you know, because because I'm now back in them again. But I was definitely tying with the idea, or entertaining the idea that might be it, you know. But then the spark came back. It would have been early this year. It would have come back, you know, and just came back kind of out of the blue, and it was very welcome to see it again. And it also coincided with Derry Girls 3 coming out, so it was obviously a great catalyst for
And I read somewhere that you're being more of yourself on stage.
Yeah.
I think, would that be more like a traditional stand-up comedian?
No. The material hasn't changed that much, but it's not something I would set out to do deliberately, but I seem to be talking less as a persona. You know, like I've always done personas, the Nighthawks persona, and then there was a Chalk and Cheese persona who was a very paranoid, very deluded character. I would like to think that was a persona. And then I did the guru thing, which was the most persona, most formal persona.
Sort of a wellness guru
thing. Yeah. And the setup was him delivering a talk, you know, to these people who'd paid a lot of money to see him. He's rich and famous, you know, in inverted commas. And so I'm not doing any of those personas now. I'm more doing my own voice, or the closest I've come to doing my own voice. And that was a bit scary, you know. Like I remember the first gig I did back, you know, when I went to do the sound check, it was in the Pavilion in Dunleary and it was sold out. But when I was doing the sound check, I wasn't prepared for it, but I felt like I had whatever preparation, whatever sort of zone you get into to allow myself to do that, you know, I hadn't got in that zone when I was doing the sound check, and I was thinking, in 2 hours' time, I'm going to come back, and this place is going to be full, and I'm going to have to talk for an hour and a half, you know.
And there's a contract. They pay money, you make them laugh.
I was going around in a bit of a daze, and I went for a walk down by the pier, Dunleary Pier, and in that time, I somehow got in the zone again, you know. I wasn't aware of it, but I had strayed so far into just being a civilian that I wasn't mentally prepared for the switch.
Mm.
And I did have to make the switch very quickly, as you can imagine, so that I wouldn't be terrified at 8 o'clock.
Because it is terrifying. Yeah. I'm in awe of comedians because, as I say, that contract is people buy tickets and you make them laugh.
Yeah, but I wasn't aware of getting in that zone. You know, obviously it happened naturally. Except after all that time off.
Yes.
And all that time of being myself and just pottering around at home, you know. I wasn't aware of the fact that I hadn't got in that zone. And I do get in it now, but still closer to myself, you know. So I'm flirting with being more myself as much as I can bear.
It must be very exciting to have this again.
It is.
It's sort of an injection, isn't it?
Into yeah. And I hope it comes across to other people because it's given me a very different energy getting on stage, you know, and it's also just revived my whole, you know,
bank
interest in it, you know, and it's a new thing for me,
yeah,
and the laughs are still as good as they ever were, but I feel different on stage and. I think
what way? Do you feel more confident? Or
I just feel that I'm closer to myself, less a persona, and I also feel closer to the audience because of that. You know, there isn't such a construct, you know, there isn't such a... I don't have to get as deep into the zone. I can stay closer to the way I was 2 hours earlier, you know. That's an interesting thing, you know.
And would you discuss this with other comedians? Because I suppose most comedians are like that. They don't get into as much a zone, a persona.
I haven't, because I suppose I don't see that many comedians anymore because of the one-man show thing. You know, I've seen more comedians on the set of Derry Girls.
Ard Lohanlon, Tommy Tiernan.
What a lineup. We weren't sitting around discussing the techniques of comedy. We were trying to remember our lines.
That scene, though, go back to it. That scene with you and Tommy Tiernan, amazing. Tell Kevin he's a tonic. Love him, says Catherine. Can you please ask Kevin to give us a play-by-play description of what was going on in the dance scene in the final episode of Derry Girls? Even thinking about it makes me laugh. I love Kevin MacLear. I remember bringing my mum to see him in the Olympia many years ago. I remember crying with the laughter at his stories, especially his dog Semtex one. That's one of your greatest hits. My poor mum didn't get any of the jokes. Definitely up there with one of the best comedians of our time. Well, your mother didn't think so. Aaron here. I'm a big fan of Kevin MacLear. Would definitely make him an offer for that DVD.
Starting to bite already.
Our freshers' week in Cork IT in late 80s was Neil Tobin, Sultans of Ping and Kevin MacLear all in one day. Ooh. What a lineup, huh?
I can't remember it.
Pure class is Maeve. And please ask Kevin, do watching Close Down on TV, he's hilarious. You can't do them on demand, can you?
Well, there isn't any Close Down anymore.
No, there isn't. Yeah, remember.
People wouldn't know what Close Down was.
They probably wouldn't be listening to Radio 1 either. So
so we're all right.
We're all right. No, but we did. We gave Kevin homework. So we asked him to do his Nighthawks on a song that people will know. It's A Man Who's Coming to Slane next year. This is the intro here. Harry Styles. You put it in context or whatever you do, but when you're ready.
Well, like me and Harry Styles, I didn't know who he was until about 3 hours ago, but I'm an expert now, you know, ask me anything. So this is Harry Styles' Watermelon Sugar, which was a huge hit for him, allegedly. Back in the 2020s or something, so this is how my old character would have would have delivered it roughly. Tastes like strawberries on a summer's evening, and it sounds just like a song. I want more berries. And that summer feeling, it's so wonderful and warm. Breathe me in, breathe me out. I don't know if I could ever go without. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know if I could ever go without. Watermelon sugar high. Watermelon sugar high. Watermelon sugar high. Watermelon sugar high. Watermelon sugar. Strawberries. On a summer's evening. Baby, you're the end of June. I want your belly. What? Is that a misprint? That's not a line I've used. I want your belly and that summer feeling getting washed away in you. Breathe me in, breathe me out. I don't know if I could ever go without. Watermelon sugar high. 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 Watermelon sugar high.
Thank you.
I just want to taste it. I just want to taste it. Watermelon sugar high. I've started till I'll finish. Hi.
Right, go on. You done?
That's most of it.
Yeah, that was very good. That was very good. Why am I here? Well, part of the reason is you're doing shows here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Where can people find out about them?
They can find out about them on kevmcaleer.ie. There's a whole list there, and the first one coming up is in the Viking Theatre in Clontarf, one of my favourite performance spaces in the universe, a little theatre above a pub on Clontarf Road. The pub is called Connolly's at the Sheds, and the Viking Theatre is run by two very, very sound individuals, and they're real human beings. They've got creativity, they've got integrity coming out of their ears. And it's somewhere where everyone should go. It holds about 70, 70 seater, and it's just one of those special performance places.
And you're going to be there.
Yeah, and apparently the tickets are. There's only a handful of tickets left. I'm doing 5 nights there.
All right.
But I would like to give the place a big shout out
Well. Because, and you've done it.
You know, they don't have any funding. Yeah, they just do it off their own bat.
Okay.
And they've survived the lockdown and they're flying now.
Brilliant. So,
more power to their elbows.
And more power to your elbows too. KevinMcAleer.ie Why Am I Here is the show, and it's doing the rounds, the Viking Theatre in Clontarf for 5 nights. Kevin, thank you so much for making the trip down. I really enjoyed that. Thank you. 51551 ray@rte.ie. We've another Kevin coming into us after the quiz to put the whole rocket that didn't take off, that might take off on Friday or next Monday, in context. And what are NASA up to, and why do they want people on the moon again 50 years on? But first we have to do our quiz. Yes, we do. And we have two people lined up waiting to answer questions on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there's a prize. It's a 2-night stay for two in a 4-star hotel in the iNUA collection. They have a stunning array of hotels dotted across Ireland. The Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, Dundalk's Fairways Hotel, Tullamore Court Hotel, Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, and any of the Radisson Blu hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. iNUA.ie, iNUA.ie. So that's the prize. On the line we have Sabrina Ferris in Clondalkin in Dublin. How are you doing, Sabrina?
How you doing, Ray? Good afternoon.
Good to talk to you.
You too. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, yeah. It does feel a bit odd, but I'm settling in nicely.
I know. I heard you talking about your cold feet part when you came back.
Yeah. But I don't know if you get that when you go back after holidays.
I was quite sick with COVID, and coming back after that was like the newbie, as you say. Like
yes.
Starting all over again. But you just slide back in. You get used to it, Ray, and that's it.
That's
you know?
It. It's like driving a car or something like that.
100%.
So absolutely. You're fully recovered now?
Fully recovered,
great.
Yes. And all back in good form.
And what did you go back to doing?
So I work in the marketing department in Ballymount, and it was good in the sense that my job didn't depend, I didn't have to liaise or work with other people in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
So I was able to take off from where I left it. And it's really exciting.
Great.
Good job. Nice company.
Great. And you have a project at home as well?
Oh, stop. Yeah, I bought the house a few years ago, but I've never really made it my own or put my own stamp on it, so I'm undertaking the beautiful job of replastering.
Yourself? You're going to do it yourself?
Oh, no. God, no, sorry. Jesus. I worded that wrong. plastering, should we say, starting next week.
Yes.
So, that's it. I'll say no more.
I'd try my hand at putting up a shelf, and I'd probably try my hand at painting, but plastering, you leave that to professionals.
Oh, no. I am not getting involved in that process. Yes. No.
So that's starting next week. That'll be a bit of a mess. But
it will, but I'll be in work, so that's it. I'll leave it to the pros.
Yeah. You're up against Adele Mooney, and Adele is in Lucan. How are you doing, Adele?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. First-time quizzer, I believe.
Yeah.
You were out this morning having coffee.
I was, yeah.
How did that go?
Oh, grand. I'm retired now, so I can do these things.
Yeah.
So I don't have to face into returning to work after holidays like you do.
Mm-hmm. How long are you retired?
Just a year.
Okay. And how's it going for you?
Loving it. Yeah, it's great. Just the freedom, you know. Now, I did like my job, and I miss my friends, my colleagues, and the crack and the banter. But, I'm enjoying the freedom. Thanks.
Okay. How are you filling your days, as well as going for coffee in the morning? What else are you doing?
Yeah, well, I've taken it fairly easy for the first year. I said I would. So I've been doing that kind of thing, going for coffee, going for lunches. I love to read. I do yoga. I've been on a few staycations.
Nice.
So generally just enjoying life.
They're doing all sorts of things with yoga now. I see Sinead upstairs. She was out doing goat yoga over the weekend. Have you heard about this?
I have.
Oh, you have? Yeah. Have you done it?
No.
Yeah.
No, I just do...
Oh, really normal yoga.
Normal, yeah.
And then somebody was telling me when I was on holidays that you can do paddleboard yoga. So you go out onto the sea on a paddleboard and then you do your downward dog, etc.
Right.
Your salutations and all that sort of thing.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that
one. I suppose when you master it, the basics of yoga, then you want to get a bit of, you know...
I'm quite happy doing. I'm quite happy, right. what I'm doing. Yeah.
What are you reading at the moment?
At the moment, I'm in a book club in my library here in Lucan, and I'm reading. They chose the book, and it's called The High House by Jesse Greengrass.
Okay, what type of a book is it?
It's a novel, but it's sort of looking into the future and climate change and what can happen.
Right.
So it's a bit scary, really, but I'm enjoying it. It's a fairly good read, yeah.
Yeah, it's odd, her name, about climate change, Greengrass is her name.
Yeah.
Sorry, suitable enough, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so we have Sabrina and your nearly next door neighbours, Clondalkin and Lucan.
Yeah.
Sabrina versus Adele. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, I'm just reminding myself now, if you go for a long clip, you get 1 point. If you go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if the drawn points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. And here we go.
Good luck.
Okay, Sabrina, first question for you, and the year is 1984, and we're at the movies, so 1984.
Okay.
What do you think? Are you going to go long or short?
I'll go short, Ray.
Okay.
We're good to go.
Radio. This American movie was released in 1984. It tells the story of a man who receives a strange creature as a pet. Have a listen and see if you can name the movie. Here's your short clip.
Oh, what is it?
No.
It's your new pet.
What was the new pet?
Jeepers. Oh, God, Ray, you caught me there.
No.
What was the pet?
A strange creature as a pet. 1984 movie.
1984. It wasn't, we know the Gremlins. Gremlins?
Is that your answer?
I'll go with it, yeah.
It's the correct answer. Gremlins is the correct answer. Yes, there you go.
Thank you.
Well done. Okay, Adele. Another blockbuster from 1984 tells the story of a young man being taught to defend himself and compete in a tournament against his bullies. Do you want to go long or short?
Short, please.
I should have asked you that first. Okay, here we go. Short.
I hear you jumped some of my students last night.
Afraid the facts mixed up.
Are you calling Mr. Lawrence a liar?
No call, no nothing.
What's that?
The only thing that's coming to mind is the Karate Kid.
Well, it's good. That's the correct answer, yeah.
Oh,
it's good that it came to mind, because you get 2 points for that. Okay, back to you, Sabrina. It's music from 1984. Do you want to go short or long?
I'll go Short, right?
Short, okay. This song was the number one hit in Ireland and around the world. Can you name the song or the band? Jitterbug.
Yeah, it is Wham and Jitterbug.
Yeah, Wham will do me. Wake me up before you go. Yes.
Wake me up. Sorry. Yeah, wake me up.
Two points.
I should have said that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you don't. Just the name of the band will do me. Okay.
Thanks.
And to you, Adele, another number one. Oh, sorry. Do you want to go long or short?
Short, please.
Short. Another number one hit in Ireland, 1984. Can you name the song or the singer? Here's your short clip. The war machine springs to life. Any ideas?
I'm trying to get it.
Okay,
sorry.
Yeah, go on. Sorry for interrupting you.
No, it's just not coming, Ray. Sorry.
Nothing there. No.
I know it, but it's
yes,
not
yeah.
Yeah.
It was Nina, 99 Red Balloons.
Ah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, course,
okay.
Course,
right.
Yeah.
Now we'll see what happens here. Sabrina's on 4. Adele, you're on 2. If Sabrina gets anything from her final question, she's today's winner. However, if she falters and you go for a short question and get it right, we're into a tiebreak situation. That's the way it stands. To you, Sabrina, then. News and current affairs, do you want to go long or short?
News and current affairs, is it right?
Yeah, news and current affairs, yes.
I will go short.
You don't need to now, but you don't need to, but you're going short. Okay, the choice is yours. In 1984, this American president came to Ireland on a 4-day official visit. Can you name him? Short clip for 2 points.
When I stepped off Air Force One at Shannon a few days ago and saw Ireland.
Ronald Reagan?
It is Ronald Reagan, yes.
Oh,
and the trip included a visit to the village of Ballyporeen in County Tipperary, his ancestral home. You got 2 points, a clean sheet, 6. Points, you can't get any more than that. Can't do better than that. Adele, sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
hard
Sabrina.
Luck,
well done.
Hard luck, Adele. You did great. You did great.
Adele, we're going to send you on a couple of Ray Darcy Show mugs and continue the yoga and the reading and all that and your staycationing.
Thanks,
and yeah, enjoy your retirement. Lovely talking to you, Adele.
Million.
See you now.
Okay,
bye. Sabrina Ferris, you are off to an iNua collection hotel. You can go to iNua.ie to find out.
Fabulous.
They have the Kilkenny and Dundalk, Tullamore, Athlone, Cork, Limerick, all over the place and up in Monaghan as well. So enjoy
so
that.
Ray.
Well done.
I will do, and thank you very much, Ray. Okay.
Lovely talking to you. See you now. See you, Sabrina.
Too,
bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, Seamus O'Reilly was writing today in The Guardian about how his son mispronounces various words, and you've been sharing yours with us. Monica says, my son used to say trachodactyl for crocodile. One day I got the video camera out, ready to get him saying it while he was taking a bath. I asked him to say crocodile, camera ready, and he said crocodile. OMG, I kept asking him, but he wouldn't say trachodactyl again, ever. I was devastated. Poor Monica. My brother used to say Hail Mary, full of grace, Dolores Whitney, instead of the Lord is with thee. And when my nephew was in junior infants, he would say he was in baby elephants. What class are you in? I'm in baby elephants. Yes. Now, Kevin Nolan's on the way to talk about moon landings and stuff, and this will get you in the humour for that. R.E.M., Man on the Moon.
Monopoly 21, checkers and chess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Fred Lassie in a breakfast mess. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, R.E.M., Man on the Moon. The Artemis generation has nearly begun 50 years after the Apollo generation and the last mission to the moon in 1972. NASA's Massive Space Launch System, or SLS Orion, or Orion, was set to blast off from the Kennedy Space Center at lunchtime today, our time, in Florida, but the mission was scrubbed because of engine problems. With me now is lecturer in physics in TU Dublin and a PhD candidate in space science, Kevin Nolan. Good to see you again, Kevin.
Pleasure to be here.
So a day like today is your sort of Harry Styles concert in the Aviva Stadium, isn't
that's it? That's it, yeah. It's supposed to be a big event. That's right.
It's a big event. Yeah. What do you understand now, a few hours on? Why did they postpone it?
The core issue is one of the four underneath rockets, what they're called RS-25s, wouldn't cool down. and they couldn't launch, it actually would have been a potential disaster. Right. Now, this could be a very small problem. They suspect some sort of sensor, or they might have to wheel it in and empty it and fix the engine, but they don't know that yet.
How many years has it taken them to get to today?
This all started in 2004 with George Bush's vision for space exploration. Obama changed it. It became Space Launch System, and this is the culmination of it. Probably 10 years, the likes of Boeing and NASA have been working around the clock to basically get this rocket to where it is now.
There's a long history of American presidents being directly involved in space travel, hasn't there?
There has, and the vice president always runs the space program, but it's an administration role. And the thing is that one of the issues in America is each president seems to change it. That causes delays, and then that's part of why we criticise for being so delayed.
But the germ of this mission started 18 years ago.
It did. When Space Shuttle Columbia destroyed on re-entry, basically the whole of the US, I suppose, political establishment said, we need to change this. Carl Sagan always said, going into orbit is going nowhere. He wanted us to go back into deep space.
Okay.
And so they decided, let's scrub shuttle and do this. Go further.
So it's 50 years on. So like everybody knows the Buzz Aldrins and the Neil Armstrongs. Nobody could, I'd say very few people can name the last man to walk on the moon.
Yeah,
in 1972.
Yeah.
So the interest faded very quickly, didn't it?
It did. In fact, it had even faded by Apollo 12, the second one nobody was watching. It was only when Apollo 13 came back with a disaster that people started to watch it again. And the thing is that I suppose whether or not you find, TV sensationalist type interest, the fact of the matter is that there has been sustained interest in space, and there has been a desire to go into deep space, but it's been too expensive until now.
Okay.
So we say 50 years, but it's the scale of the task.
Now, you mentioned the cost there. I was looking at the today's equivalent cost of the Apollo missions, about $150 billion.
Yeah.
$150 billion dollars. And that was at a time when there was huge poverty in America.
That's right.
So it became increasingly difficult, I would imagine, for administrations to justify that amount of money.
It was unsustainable, somewhere in estimates of 2.5 to 3% of their GDP. In fact, I read somewhere once that each Apollo launch was the same as Ireland's GDP at the time, each launch, about $24 billion in real terms today. And so you can see Artemis is costing each launch is $4 billion, a sixth as much, and actually the rest of the program maybe costs as little as a tenth as much.
So it's cheaper now to get a man on the moon.
Oh yeah, that's why they're doing it now sustainably.
Okay, let's get on to the technical aspects. The rocket that will go on Friday or Monday, everything been sorted out, is unmanned.
Yeah.
And the purpose of the mission is to do what?
Is to test this system, because it's gigantic. It's bigger than Saturn V. It not only is it to bring people to the moon, it's to build a space station around the moon, propose lunar base on the moon, and even to build Mars-rated human rockets to go send people to Mars in the 30s. So it's an entire generation of new technology. And the Orion spacecraft that will carry people, like that will have to support people for up to 21 days in deep space as they assemble this space station.
Will you just take it apart for us then?
Yeah.
So
the Space Launch System is the main orange and white rocket with its solid boosters.
Where does that go when the thing breaks off?
In fact, that actually just lands and crashes into the Atlantic Ocean.
Right. Is it reusable?
It's not.
No.
And that's a criticism that's coming at it because Elon Musk is revolutionising reusability. Now, he's doing that for low Earth orbit rockets, which
are about
a tenth as sophisticated. He's doing one called the Starship. It's not there yet. But the thing is that this wasn't part of its remit. I think the criticism's too harsh because this is a totally different scale rocket. We say it's about 100 times harder to get to the moon than to Earth orbit. So the job was get people safely to the moon, and as John Kennedy would say, home, not reusability. Now, in that, the rockets on the base of this were used in the shuttle. They're reused rockets. The tanks are reused.
I suppose what people won't understand is, if you look at a car, for example, from 1972, and look at a car from 2022, world of difference. But the car in 2022 wouldn't exist without the one from 1972, built on technology.
Yeah.
So why haven't we taken what we've learned and all that technology from the 70s and late 60s and just sort of 21st century did.
Well, we have. I mean, like, if you take, for example, the two side boosters, they're solid rocket boosters. They're way more efficient. So this thing can lift even more into orbit, and it's completely computer controlled. And future rockets, even by Boeing and Airbus in Europe, will be reusable. So the thing is, however, what I'll say to you is, what a lot of people don't understand is the scale of this. This is 35 stories high. You're lifting something the size. Yeah, you're lifting something the size of a skyscraper or the, what do you call it, the Statue of Liberty into space, but to do it with people on board and to protect them and get them home. Even rockets, we launch satellites into space. Okay, you lose $1 billion if it blows up, but there's no human life.
Okay, so that rocket then, some of it falls off into the Pacific Ocean and it's not reusable. Mm. And then what's left?
So what's left then is the upper stage, the white kind of curved stage. That's called the Orion spacecraft. That's the most advanced spacecraft ever built. It's more advanced than the shuttle or even the International Space Station. And that can take people beyond the moon even for up to a month. Right. And four astronauts. It's got amazing mod cons on board, even in its confined space, for doing exercise, artificial intelligence support for monitoring their bodies and all sorts of things. So what's going on at the upper end of this? And when they land on the moon, they'll
be the Orion. Will it be?
Well, the Orion will actually interface in orbit around the moon with what SpaceX are to build now within 3 years, called the Lunar Lander. And I mean, that's
so Elon Musk is going to be responsible for the thing that lands on the moon.
Yeah, he won that contract about 2 years ago.
So that'll be part of this Orion thing. That'll leave the rocket, and then that'll leave the Orion and land on the moon.
Yeah. So the Orion is like, remember, the kind of the triangular pointy bit. Then the lunar lander is like what Elon Musk will build, and that's not built yet. Right. He's building it right now.
So this is a real team effort, because already you mentioned Boeing and who else? And
well, Europe. It's like Europe have built the, what's called the back end of the Orion. The propulsion and power that will bring astronauts from Earth orbit to the moon is all European.
Okay.
And in fact, we get three astronaut missions to the moon before 2030.
Who we? Europe.
And we already have we have an astronaut program in Europe. Most, in fact, they're recruiting right now. 2022, 278 Irish people applied. We won't know for another few months who's chosen, whether one of those is Irish, but Irish people have applied, and if they're chosen, they'll go to the moon.
And we contribute to ESA, which is the European
Ireland Zoo, the European Space Agency. We're one of the founding members of it.
Now, how much do we contribute?
We actually contribute very small, about $20 million euro a year, but we get back 5 to 6 times that in European Space Agency contracts. So True Enterprise Ireland, in fact, a colleague of mine, Dr. Niall Smith in Munster Technology University, have written a new space science programme for Ireland to try and maybe double that or more between now and 2025. So Ireland wants to get more and more involved.
So we give 20 million, but we get contracts back in excess of that.
In 2020, we got 133 million back in contracts.
Okay.
So it's big, it's good business. Like, space business is $500 billion a year globally.
When I read about this the other day, I constantly think of Gil Scott-Heron. I don't know if you know him. He was sort of the first rapper. He was a poet.
Right. Yes.
A black man in 60s, 70s America. And he had this thing called Whitey on the Moon. Right. I'll just play you a little bit of it. Just a little bit of it.
A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the Moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon.
You get the gist.
Yeah.
You get the gist.
Yeah. The thing I'll say is this, first of all, I have to say...
I'm not here to defend this, but
it is an interesting part of this. So what NASA want to do by 2025 is land the first woman and first person of colour on the moon, just to address that.
So I was looking at the 12 people who've walked on the moon are all white men. White men.
So they want to address that immediately. And even ESA's astronaut programme is to encourage more women and actually one person with a disability to be an astronaut.
Right.
So that's being addressed. Secondly, in terms of the cost, all of the money spent on this leads to innovation. I'll give you one statistic.
Okay.
70% of the chip design in America was put into the Apollo program, and it accelerated their chip design by 10 years. Ireland got their first computer company, Digital, in the 70s and Intel and Leaksip in 89. That wouldn't have happened had it not been for Apollo. They literally accelerated chip design a decade. So we can go all around, you know, the
I suppose the thing that so it's 50 years on, and you know, the world hasn't stopped turning because nobody's been on the moon in those 50 years. So now it's the next level. So it's about people living on the moon.
It's a permanent presence in deep space. Right. And you know, that's a societal thing. That's like, very often you might say, am I delighted? I'm interested in this because it's a positive human story, not because I like space.
Yes.
And what I often say, even getting back to the other innovation thing, is other things that we innovate on Earth, like things like war or pandemics.
Yes.
This is, I believe, a positive human story. And secondly, as we get older, you're right, you've talked about the Artemis generation. Like, we've new young people who are ambitious and excited and want to explore, and they're the ones driving this, you know?
Right. If it takes off this weekend, when do they plan to have a person on the moon then?
Right. The objective is, in 2 years' time, in 2024, to send four people around the moon, not land on it. And then, if SpaceX can deliver in time, the plan is the first woman and person of colour on the moon in 2025. I personally believe that could be anywhere between 2025 and 2028.
Okay. It is fascinating, and a whole new generation, as you say, will be sitting down in front of their tellies to see people land on the moon. Kevin Nolan from TU Dublin, thanks so much, and we'll talk again about this. That's it from us. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Cormac and Sarah on the way. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.